Yes. You want to come already? Okay.
Are you okay?
Of course. I think we all know the form now.
This is the...
Okay. A book full of questions?
I wrote it down because I felt I might be too excited. Okay.
Yes.
So the question is about relationship.
Okay.
It's an age-old question.
Yes,
actually,
indeed.
It's a bunch of kind of inquiry that I've been deeply involved with for many years, and the meeting of relationship in Dharma is something that brought up a lot of questions, and I've heard many answers, and I would really love to hear your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
So first to say that. Maybe it's stating the obvious, but the Dharma has been extremely transformational in my life and,
yes,
and central and deep and profound. So, I sometimes think that maybe the Buddha was the expert about enlightenment and for liberation, but I'm not sure about relationships. I'm not sure how much it was his thing, especially romantic relationships, but relationships in general.
Okay.
I was hoping this would be helpful for other people as well. So some things I find quite, I would say there are many studies that I came across that say that the number one factor in people's well-being in their lives is the quality of their relationships.
Yes.
Or especially the loving, intimate, close relationships. And so a few things that I worry about with Dharma language, with idealistic language sometimes, that things that happened to me along the way, for example, in the first decade of my practice,
yes,
which has been practicing over 20,
yes,
and I came across a lot of loneliness,
mm,
and depression.
Oh.
And social anxiety.
Oh.
And in a way I found refuge in the Dharma in many,
yes,
ways.
Mm.
And when I came to personal interviews, basically the main answer was, sit, observe, open your heart to it. And I felt that the needs for connection, for being seen,
yes,
and loved,
yes,
for relationship, were not fully acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes feeling that the Buddha's words about relationships, about respect and truthfulness, is great and basic ethical foundation, but it's really very insufficient for me. And
so we're coming to the question?
Yes, yes, sorry for a long introduction.
No,
I feel it's important.
Yes, go ahead.
So So yeah, the basic fundamental question is the letting go of everything and yes. where it has, where it meets the relationship, the close relationships. And the danger of emotional disconnect or detachment,
yes.
which happened to me, and I also see, I think that I see in many other people as well, that, you know, there's a lot of teaching about basic okayness and equanimity. So I feel difficult and I say, okay, I'm really sad, but it's okay. It's okay. I can deal with it. It's okay. It's okay. But I'm not really with it in a sense, and I'm not expressing it and not bringing it into the relationship. And then it stays kind of flat.
Yes.
And it happened to me, and I've seen it happen to others in my perception.
All right. I think it's completely true that there's very little in the Dharma about interpersonal relationship, or definitely almost nothing about romantic love. And Christopher Titmus, my teacher and dear friend of many years, always jokes that if the Buddha were alive today, that it would be the ninefold noble path. And the ninth of that would be relationship. And I think there's some truth in that. And in some of the other traditions, you'll find, in the Hindu tradition, for example, you'll find Radha and Krishna and lots of, you know, lovers. In the Dharma teachings, this is not really spoken about. And we don't really know quite what was said at the time of the Buddha, because a scholar, a Pali scholar of mine, certainly told me that the sections in the Pali canon about women have clearly been added later because they are in a different style of Pali, and of course they were added in the monasteries. So you see, we don't have any kind of accurate picture about what it could have been that the Buddha said. Although, of course, he did leave his wife and child to go in search of truth. So we can make some assumptions about his priorities.
Can I say something about
yes,
that?
Yes, do.
One thing that worries me sometimes, well, I also study and practice psychology.
Yes.
And the psychology keeps evolving, say, from Freud's model of one person psychology to interactive relational two-person psychology. So there's something that keeps revolving, and sometimes I worry that the truth that the Buddha discovered was so big, and so we mostly teach that, and we don't give much room for so many evolutions and revelations of us as people and practitioners that has happened since.
Okay, so
we focus on his teachings.
So let's come to you, since you're the one up here. So please share with us a little about your relationship, current relationship or ships, and what you've understood about it.
I've understood that, well, I want to say she's the most important thing in my life, and but I wouldn't compare it to the Dharma.
You would or wouldn't?
I wouldn't.
Wouldn't?
It's just different. it's just different, but it's so fundamental.
Yes.
And it's such a deep need.
Yes.
That I feel that it hasn't been acknowledged enough in the Dharma world. The need for intimacy and trust and connection.
Yes.
And all that I've learned through our relationships about healthy attachment in the psychological sense.
Yes. So the capacity to really be with another lovingly,
yeah,
with great care.
To be seen by, to lean on, to be significant to, also in my work as a therapist, so there's a whole world there that is, that is not so much included in Dharma teaching.
I think it's not so much included in very traditional Dharma teachings,
right.
But I have been known to give workshops on relationship. In fact, I gave one last time I was in Israel. Okay. So let's come back to this word relationship. So taking a Dharma perspective and a life perspective, because the two aren't separate, I guess I'm asking you to look at relationship not from a narrow point of view, but from a bigger point of view. But included in that, of course, is our intimate personal relationship with our lover, if we have one.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is your relationship to the lover and to the world?
A lot of gratitude.
Yes, beautiful.
And respect.
Yes. Yes. And if you think about your Dharma practice, what's your relationship to that?
A lot of gratitude.
Exactly. Whoa, we have some commonality here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Hmm. I think that, well, there are infinite commonalities in the relationship to ourselves and our experiences in the world. To the lover.
Yes.
So could you refer more specifically to the not clinging to anything in the world?
Yes.
How it...
When
you have a child?
Of course.
Yeah.
Let's start with the lover. When we're really with our lover, what happens to the self? When we really kiss our lover, what happens to the self? The me.
There are gracious moments of dissolution.
Yes.
And disillusion. And but that's not all there is.
No, no. And there's the touch of the divine. Love is a divine quality of the heart, isn't it? And sometimes when we're with our lover, we can really have that sense of boundless love that's rather divine.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. It sounds like you must need a bit of practice. Okay, and then you said with a child. There's confusion with the language about non-attachment. Of course, we have a healthy bonding with our children, and we take care of them. This is not what the Buddha meant by attachment. You know that. Mm. So, your turn. What's the sticking point for you here? Have you separated out one part of life from the rest?
Maybe I wonder when, if the teachings are sometimes doing us some disservice,
yes,
with a language that is absolute, and works really well for Dharma practice on the cushion, and not always that well for daily life.
Okay, so what the Buddha taught was ultimate freedom and freedom in the conventional world. To be indifferent and to use the Dharma practice as a way of avoidance of the difficulties of life or responsibilities of life is a misunderstanding, isn't it? So can you see your life, your relationship, as part of the totality? Because liberation of the heart and mind is expressed as relationship to the conventional world and ultimately, isn't it? Okay. So how is your relationship with your partner outside of that?
If I go back to what I've called basic emotional needs.
Yes.
So I need her attention. I need her care.
Mm-hmm.
I need her respect.
What if she was not there?
She was not paying attention, not respectful, and not kind.
No, no, I didn't say that. Not there.
What do you mean not there?
She will die.
Oh, she would die? There would be a lot of pain.
Yes. So when we have that dependence on another for our happiness, and the other for all kinds of reasons that we can't and don't know about, dies, and dies perhaps suddenly, we would then be left with our difficulty.
Right.
Because the other is no longer there.
Could die, she could leave.
Yes, yes indeed. And this happens. Our partners do leave us, or our partners die sometimes.
Yeah.
No need to go into horror and terror and fear of the future, please. But this is the vulnerability of the reliance on the other for one's happiness.
It's very human.
Yes, yeah. It is very human. All too human.
So are we trying to be free of that?
I think the freedom needs to be there regardless of whether the person loves us or not. And I learned this the very hard way. When someone I loved very much left me. And Christopher said to me, my dear friend, he said, Radha, it's not about you. He didn't leave because of you. It's not about you. So I had to think about this really, really, really deeply.
The Dharma helped me to be less terrified from that option.
Yes.
Yes. There's a knowing that I can face.
Yes.
Grief.
Yes.
So I'm less terrified from that.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that. I would say, if you would tell me, you know, practice not clinging to this relationship, it wouldn't make complete sense to me.
Okay. Can I just go on a little and tell you what I understood from the breakup of this relationship? When this man left me, oh gosh, I can't remember how long ago it was, but I must have been in my 50s. And I felt like I was 16 years old. Suddenly, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. I felt completely and utterly broken-hearted. And this went on for 3 days. I was walking across my dining room at home. I'd come home from India and the wardrobe in the bedroom was empty. He had gone. It's a long story of why. And it was causes and conditions contributing to the breakup of relationships. Relationships don't end because of us. They end because they're no longer supported by the causes and conditions that keep them in place, right? But that wasn't my insight. The insight, as I walked across the dining room, the inquiry question that occurred to me, because I was feeling so broken-hearted, was, is there a part of my heart that can never be broken? And the second that I thought that, I knew the truth of it. That of course there was part of my heart that was totally unbreakable and unbroken and whole. And with that, all of the terrible sensations that I'd been having for 3 days subsided, and there was stability again. It was miraculous. So this is what happens when we turn the attention to that which is unshatterable, that which is unbroken, that which can never be lost. This is the only way through that I know. Because if we rely on another for our happiness, and we love being with the person, and there's a long story about life, as there was with this person, you know, there was all sorts of projections. You know, I'd met this man in India when I was young, he'd come back into my life later, and it was this beautiful, loving, fabulous relationship for a little while, and then it suddenly came to an end. For reasons that actually weren't to do with me, he had a little meltdown about a taxation bill, a very significant taxation bill, and he just shut himself in a room for 3 years. And so the relationship ended. So coming back to you, yes, you are with your lover now, and you're reliant upon her. And she's fulfilling a need in you. But inevitably, that will come to an end. So there needs to be the recognition and the knowing of that which can never be lost. It's the only way I know to any kind of security. Your turn.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay. All right.
I think the Dharma has been extremely helpful after
yes.
Separations and losses
yes.
to me.
Yes, okay.
And a wonderful, unshakable refuge.
Yes. Unshakable refuge. Okay. Yeah. It is an unshakable refuge. Mm. Even if she were to leave you.
Yes. I'm not so...
Did you hear that?
Yes, but the problem is not her leaving me. I'm not so afraid of her leaving me because I can handle it because I have the Dharma.
Yes. What are you afraid of?
So, I'm afraid that the relationship will last, not that it will be gone in a way. Because ending relationships is in some way easier because I've been a very, you know, a practitioner for many years, and I can be, I can handle loss, but handling relationship is much more complex.
Oh, so you're afraid it will last?
Afraid of?
It will last.
Yes, that's much more afraid.
Oh, so there's your challenge. So what are the challenges? Do tell. What are the challenges in the relationship? And this is true, of course, whether our relationship is with someone of the same gender or another gender, it doesn't matter.
It's a very difficult to find a healthy balance between having holding the unshakable freedom view and experience of Dharma.
Yes.
And the day-to-day relational emotions and needs that come about in both sides, and the complexity is there. It's really hard for me to hold both and to see. And what I've found, as I said in previous years, that holding the Dharma view is sometimes left me slightly disconnected from
yes.
the other person.
That was my next question.
So I think in a way I can
yeah.
say I'm looking for the middle way, because I've took the kind of more the Dharma side, and after that at some points more the relationship side, just being completely enmeshed or involved with emotions, and just how to hold the gentle fine balance of both. That's a middle way that I'm looking for.
Okay. Disconnection needs to end. What will you do about that? How will you end any kind of disconnection? Because disconnection leads to distance and indifference and
That's not a difficult question for me.
Not?
No.
Okay, tell us the answer then.
So it's honesty.
Yes.
And courage and openness.
Yes, beautiful.
And care. And,
yeah.
And willingness to put prejudice aside and really listen.
Yeah.
And try to really, really, really understand the other person. And
yes. And to be really there,
yeah.
and to be with the person's faults, and also with their wonders, the things we love about them. And the same with us. We come with our difficulties, we come with our past, we come with perhaps a residue of something. And often, long-time Dharma practitioners of both genders, but often of this particular gender, come, I'm treading in hot water here, but come.
In Israel even more.
Yeah, yeah. Come with a kind of a disconnection or a distance or a slight indifference. You know, I'm really cool. I've been a spiritual seeker for a long time, and if I have a problem, I'll just go sit and watch my sensations. Well, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't work to go sit, watch your sensations.
It works outside relationship.
Yeah.
But once in relationship, it reveals your hidden faults.
Exactly. Exactly. It's called spiritual bypassing. It's called bypassing that which needs to be addressed. And it's a kind of misunderstanding, as I see it, of the Dharma.
I agree.
Mm. Okay, so it's to be fully engaged, to be alive, to be really with the person, yet knowing that if for some reason this relationship would come to an end, our refuge is in that which can never be broken, that which can never be lost.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for an excellent question. Yes, anybody? Yes, come. Hello.
Hello. I was scared before, now I'm even more. But let's go. That was a very interesting conversation. And I am not sure that I know exactly what is the this part that can never be lost.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
But
all right.
But that's not the question, but it's important for the question. What I do know from the practice,
yes,
that the thing we work with all the time is the awareness.
Yes.
And it seems like, so it's a rather theoretical question, but it's derived from a personal experience. So it seems like everything I'm aware of, everything there is, I can only know about through my consciousness.
Yes.
So I do believe there is stuff out there. I don't know. I only know through my perceptions and awareness. And then I came to think that there are different realms of consciousness. So there is the meditative consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and there is the daily life consciousness. I mean, there are varieties in both. And then there is the imagination realm of
mm-hmm.
consciousness and the dream realm
okay.
of consciousness. And I'm not sure, as Dharma practitioners, how do we suppose to work with or see these different realms?
Oh, okay. So, let's start with awareness. What do you know and understand about awareness? From your experience of sitting, not from theory.
Mm-hmm. It's based on conditions, and it's based on my senses.
Sorry?
It's based on my senses.
Ah.
And
no. Okay. Awareness. When we sit and we're just aware, awareness reveals things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So awareness has the capacity to reveal.
Yeah.
Awareness reveals many things. Some of the things that it reveals are the senses, as you say, but that's not the totality of what awareness can reveal.
No, of course it's not the totality, but I thought it's like the other way around. Like the senses are like nourishing the awareness. Some of the things that nourishes the awareness. The inputs. These are the inputs.
We are sensory beings,
yeah.
And so we experience the world through the senses, including thought.
Mm.
Awareness isn't personal. Awareness is vast. Okay. Yeah.
I cannot experience the non-personal awareness.
Of course you can.
How? Okay.
Okay. Okay. You're sitting in meditation.
Yeah.
Describe a sitting for me. Or just do it now and describe what happens.
Okay.
You're aware.
Yeah. I'm aware of the breath. I'm aware of the space.
Yes.
I'm aware of the body.
Yes.
I'm aware of the mental. mental action in my mind.
Yes. Great.
Yeah.
So awareness reveals all of these things. It
yeah.
shows us I'm thinking now.
Yeah.
It shows me I'm sitting here.
So these things happen whether I'm aware or not aware.
Yes.
Probably.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
when I put my intention on something,
mm-hmm.
then it changes the thing many times.
Yes.
For example, if I put my intention on my shoulder, then
yeah.
I get more feelings
yes.
in my
okay.
shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Sorry?
So, is it still awareness of things that are there, not dependent on my awareness?
Okay, so you're
or
saying...
Not my awareness, the awareness that experience.
Okay, so you're saying, is the subject influencing the object?
What would be the subject in that question?
You.
Yes.
So let's come, okay, so we've looked at awareness a little bit. Let's come to consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by consciousness?
I'm not sure, I have to
yeah.
say.
Okay.
But it's like the veil that everything I'm aware of goes through. Or
Well said.
But also some things that I'm not aware of go through the same way.
Yes, okay, we'll come to that. All right, so we are conscious of, the way that consciousness is used in the Dharma is we're conscious of the senses. And consciousness has a knowing quality. You said before in the introduction that consciousness knows.
Yeah.
Okay. Awareness reveals and consciousness knows. There's a knowing quality.
Okay. Then can I tell you the experience
yes.
that led to this
please,
question?
Please.
I had a dream last morning.
Oh, I love a dream. Yes, go on.
And in this dream, I was very angry.
Yes.
So I work with anger sometimes
mm-hmm.
on the meditation level
mm-hmm.
or the daily
mm-hmm.
Awareness,
mm-hmm.
consciousness
mm-hmm.
level. When
mm-hmm.
I see it, I think about it, I contemplate on it, I try to reduce it, I try to work with it in different levels, but in a dream, I don't have the tools to do all that. I just woke up and so in the dream, I was supposed to come for to cut the vegetables at 7:15, which was not only in the dream, that was in the reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's a morning dream, so you already wake up and then you go back
okay.
to sleep. So
yeah.
these dreams I always
yeah.
remember.
Okay, so you dreamed that you had to go and...
Yeah. But in the dream, not in the reality, the whole kitchen staff was not doing anything. Not you. I don't know these
yes.
people in the dream. Like, they were having... pizza leftovers from yesterday and the big party, and I was like I couldn't, like, I wanted, in a way I wanted to be a part of the party, but I was also like, what's going on, you know, I you don't, nobody cared that in 10 minutes the yogis will be here and there will be no breakfast and when I woke up, I also know the trigger for the dream.
Okay.
Because I think about it afterwards. But I know this dream for before. I had many times angry dreams.
Yes.
And everyone was doing something, and I was the only one that think that it's not what should be done.
Yes.
And it feels very, like there is a sense of righteousness.
Yes. The one who knows best.
Yes. And also there is a sense of loneliness.
Yes.
Big loneliness, because like I see the kitchen staff here as my friends, and sometimes in my dreams it's family members or good friends, and sometimes I woke up and I'm like, you know, you were really, really annoying in the dream, and I'm actually angry. So, and I wake up really angry. I don't know how to work with that. So when I woke up, I was just laughing about it.
Yes.
And went to cut the vegetables.
Okay. So what's your dream telling you?
Oh.
What is this dream telling you?
That's what I can't understand. Like, the day before, I saw the staff in the kitchen standing.
Yes.
And they were like 2 minutes late for opening the door. So I
yes.
was on the, and then I thought, ah.
Oh, they're late.
But 2 minutes
late.
No, but because they were standing and talking. But I was.
Oh yes, they were talking.
I wasn't angry. That's the thing.
Okay.
That I was like, oh yeah, I know.
But you noticed they were two minutes late.
Yeah, I noticed. But then I, you know, I let, like the minute the food came into my mouth, I forgot about it. But in the dream.
Yes.
I was angry.
Okay.
So you know, it's difficult enough to work with stupid angers. In the real life,
yeah,
but when they come in dream.
Okay, okay, okay. This is a great dream. It's telling you something, and you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Okay. The dream is, as this is my interpretation, because when we have a dream, the dream's actually symbolic. Okay, it's a symbol. In your dream, you are angry and righteous.
And lonely.
And lonely. Sorry, I forgot that one. Angry, righteous, and lonely. Would you like all three of these difficult emotional states to disappear? Would you like them not to color consciousness so much?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
But.
But.
But I have to admit that working with anger, sometimes there is also pleasant feeling about it. Sometimes it's like there is a lot of selfing.
Yeah.
I am right. But I was right. That's what makes it more.
Okay, so there's the anger, and there's the attachment to the anger.
No, I don't want the anger.
Oh, good, good. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Okay. So, you have the anger. You have the righteousness. And you have the loneliness, and you dream it.
Yeah.
The dream is telling you that these very states are a dream. They're illusory. Now, I'm not saying there is no anger in this world. Okay. Does anger, when you really look at it?
No.
It doesn't what? Have substance. Yeah, it doesn't, does it?
It doesn't. So
okay. It doesn't.
No, and I know that, but also, I also know that, I mean, breakfast should be served.
Breakfast
like
should be served, did you say?
Yeah. That's why I'm confused also about like likes and dislikes.
Yes.
Because if I try to see all as illusions and
I'm not saying the whole world is an illusion, okay? some people hold this view. But there are certain things that we take as truth, which when we look at them, dissolve. They do not have substance. And if we want to see into anger, we have to see the emptiness of it. We have to see that it doesn't actually have substance. This righteousness.
Okay, so let's assume that,
that. Yes, okay.
Then what's there then? Like what has the right to be there?
Well, if you bring awareness to the anger, you see how it's constructed with the selfing process that you just described, my thoughts about the other, what they should be doing, according to me. This is how the anger's constructed, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yet, when you really look at it, they're just thoughts, views, opinions.
Yeah. So everything, I mean, there are almost all our, or maybe all our beliefs and views are just stories.
Yes.
But some stories are are more accurate than other stories. You can see that when you see that.
Of course, all the ones that you think are right are accurate.
Not necessarily.
I'm teasing.
But but I'm saying not necessarily. But
okay.
Still, I mean, even if I like contemplate on my views and stories, I know that some of them are really a joke and some of them has something.
Okay. What keeps anger and loneliness in place and righteousness? What is required for anger, loneliness, and righteousness to exist?
Preparing the breakfast without getting angry. It was a dream.
Yes, I know.
To wake up.
I know.
So I didn't wake up angry. That's the thing. That's how I just let it go very quickly. But I was thinking about it. The day before you were saying about something else, but that the Buddha used to say, I know you, Ma.
Yes.
And I thought, if I should say this to this stupid angry feeling, like, I know you, Mara.
Yes, you could.
Because it's the same, right? I mean,
it's the same. It's the same. This is negativity appearing in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the self is clinging to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
The loneliness and the negativity and the righteousness is only there when the self is there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hold that. Stop there. When we are aware, come back to your deepest spiritual experience for me. Reflect on your most profound spiritual experience you've ever had. Oh, yes, just choose one.
Okay.
So tell us, what happened? It can just be a brief experience.
Yeah, I was doing walking meditation.
Yes.
Between the trees.
Yes, beautiful.
And it was exciting somehow. I there were tears in my eyes.
Yes. Yes.
Like a touch of the beyond all this nonsense.
Okay. So awareness revealed the beyond and there were tears.
Yeah. But I wouldn't call it awareness that brought it.
What would you say?
sure, it's still like a kind of magic for me, but awareness seems to me like we have to be aware, like are you supposed to be to know? No, this is the consciousness. So
this is the consciousness, yeah. So just coming back, when you were, whatever you were, walking between the trees,
yeah,
whether it was aware or conscious, we use these words interchangeably sometimes.
Mm.
You were walking between the trees. You had that feeling or touch of the beyond.
Yeah.
What happened to the self?
It fades away.
Yes, it just fades into the background.
Yeah.
It's no longer in the forefront of consciousness.
Yeah.
And then?
Then I appreciated the moment.
Yes.
So I guess it is the self again.
Yes, the self can go, oh, I had a fantastic meditation. Or we can reflect on what that sense of the beyond means. What's the insight from having had that experience? What does that experience tell you about how to live your life?
Mm. More in touch.
Yes.
With whatever.
Yes.
There. With nature.
Yes.
Meditate more. Do more walking meditations.
Yes.
Come to more retreats.
Yes. Keep going.
Tells me the practice works, it's like fruit.
Yes.
Sweet and tasty.
Sweet and tasty. So when we are with our awareness, the awareness reveals that which is beyond, if you like, a touch of the beyond, you called it. We know what you mean. Something other than me. Something other than the self that is required to keep in place the difficult things of anger and loneliness and righteousness. So we need to listen inwardly and treasure and reflect on and know these experiences of the vast. And then we see that there's a reality, there's a way of living, a way of being, that isn't bound up with self, that isn't about me and my righteousness or me and my anger.
Yes.
Okay.
Just a small question.
Yeah.
I mean, in the first question, then.
Oh, that was only the first question.
No, no, I mean, I'm taking us back to the first question.
Yes.
About the realms of,
yes,
of consciousness.
Yes.
So this work can be done or should be done through dreams as well. And
of course, our dreams reveal something to us. And in this case, the dream is telling you that in this life, what is really a dream is this constructed self.
So it's part of consciousness.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. when we really see our freedom, our indifference ceases. Non-attachment is not detachment. And so, of course, in our relationships, we need to be fully present, alive, vital, engaged, listening, and all the other beautiful qualities of the heart that Thoma mentioned, such as honesty. The capacity to love and be loved is something that we as human beings, I think, all want at some level. We don't always have to find it in romantic relationship. We can find it in other forms of relationship. Relationship to the whole of humanity, relationship to the environment, relationship to the animal worlds, where you know, for some people their whole life is centered around caring for animals and you know, really taking care in very particular ways. Whatever that may be. So I think it really is important that we don't ignore, we don't detach and ignore those people around us and those in our life. And yes, the Buddhist teachings, as they are very regularly taught, don't really have much to say about romantic love and how we might engage consciously with great awareness. And I do think that this is an area that we can most certainly explore. It's not part of the monastic tradition, however. And I think a lot of what we have as the Dharma in the texts and so on has been passed down to us through the monasteries. And so therefore we have to look at it quite intelligently and say, well, yes, something's missing, so therefore we'll write some new suttas. We'll develop the path so that it's full and we can really have a rich, awakened life. Why not? And in the second inquiry, awareness has the capacity to reveal with consciousness. We are conscious of things through the senses. Awareness, however, can also reveal that which is not of the senses. And one of the great inquiry questions is, what is it that is not of the senses? We experience consciousness through the sense doors, and yet somehow we have a sense of the beyond. So this is to be explored. And of course our dreams often come with a message for us to see into something, to look at something. So thank you to the two who inquired, and thank you all for listening. So perhaps if the bell ringer could ring the bell. We'll have about 15 minutes of walking and then come back for some metta meditation to finish the day. Apologies for going a little long.